sky, and both were seen in Kenosha. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next. Support for WGTD comes from Jack Andrea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, newly reimagined for 2019. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. More information at jackandrea.com. Jack Andrea, a proud supporter of WGTD's morning show. Support for WGTD also comes from Music by the Lake, hosting Broadway, television star, and Tony Award-winning baritone Brian Stokes Mitchell with the celebrated Chicago Philharmonic in concert tomorrow night, Saturday, August 10th, in Williams Bay. If you purchase tickets at their website, musicbythelake.com, you can get a special discount offer exclusive to WGTD listeners. In the promo code bar, type in WGTD10. That is WGTD and the numbers 1010 for a special offer for WGTD listeners. And we welcome you to the Friday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I am very, very excited about today's morning show because, first of all, it is a long overdue conversation about Kenosha Creative Space, which is a real cultural gem in the heart of downtown Kenosha. And it is also going to be the site of a very special art exhibit that is about to open. And so we're going to be talking, first of all, with Francisco Loyola, who is the executive director of Kenosha Creative Space, and Margaret Heller, who is very active there and the project director for this beautiful art exhibit that is about to open and running for just over a month, called Imágenes de Latinoamérica, Images of Latin America. And this is a extraordinary art collection that comes from the Baird family. And we have Lorna Baird with us to talk about her parents, her father in particular, who was instrumental in the gathering of this spectacular art collection and in making it available to the public through this wonderful exhibit. So, Francisco Loyola and Margaret Heller and Lorna Baird, we welcome all three of you to the morning show. It's great to have you here.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good to have you, Greg.
First of all, Francisco, I wanted to make sure to begin with you. I think it's important for people to understand what Kenosha Creative Space is. And maybe we could begin by hearing a little bit about its background. When did it first open its doors and with what purpose in mind?
Yeah, the project started, as you recall, about 5 years ago that we were trying to renovate an older building in downtown Kenosha. That was the original idea, to use the creativity and the talent in the town to help with the economic development of the downtown area. the project became a little bit more expensive than we were expecting at that time. So we decided to downsize, and we have our location.
Well, that was pretty.
Yeah, that's my phone telling me that I need to be here with you. And 2 years ago, we were able to move from the original location to the location that we are right now at 624 57th Street, the corner of 57 and 7. I believe that it has taken us some time to reach the point that we feel really comfortable to get more people involved. You have been there. Carthage College has been really involved with the project. But the main idea is to have a gathering central point in the downtown area that can be used for all the creatives, all the artists, musicians, to connect and create together and use the talents to keep helping the growing of the Kenosha, especially the downtown area. And I believe that it took some time to get to the point that we are, but the community is responding, so we're really satisfied with that. So.
Very good. Margaret Heller, tell us a little bit about what your involvement has been with Kenosha Creative Space, even ahead of this particular art exhibit.
I've worked on a number of projects with Francisco, a pop-up gallery of quilts and many of his pop-up challenges, but I met him about 6-8 years ago, and because of his interest in the arts and my connection with the Baird family, Lorna's mother, Pat Tully Baird, is my mother's sister, Margaret Tully Heller, and we got talking about the collection of the Baird family because he knew all the artists, and so to be able to talk about this collection that I saw first in 1972 was exciting. And we had the idea that maybe someday we could get this together. And that was 6 years ago. And so finally that happened this year.
Mm. So this long-held dream is reaching fruition.
Tomorrow is the private opening for the family. And then it'll be open to the public on Sunday and then throughout August into September 15th.
That's correct.
Real. And with us is Lorna Baird. And it is certainly her cooperation and the cooperation of others in her family that make all of this possible. We are glad that you can join us today. We welcome you.
Thank you.
From far off Oakland, California, where you now make your home. So, first of all, I think it will be helpful to our listeners to understand a little bit about your parents and where they came from, what they did, and what ultimately brought them to Mexico City, which sets a lot of this into motion. So let's start there.
Okay. Well, my parents both worked at the Johnson's Wax facility in Racine, and I believe that's where they met. That's the story I've been told. My father, took a tour of the Johnson facility yesterday and found out that Johnson's Wax started a company in Mexico City in 1954. So my father, the story that we've always heard from about my family is that he decided to move to take a job in Mexico City to begin the Johnson factory, a wax factory in Mexico City. And that's what brought him to Mexico City originally. And they were only in their early 30s. And my mother was 28 years old. My dad was 32. And they moved from Kenosha to Mexico City in the 50s.
It would be so interesting to know, and maybe you do have some sense of whether or not that was something that they were excited to do or if they felt any kind of reluctance and or fear about undertaking such a drastic change in their lives at that point. Did they ever talk about that?
They did. My mother was 7 months pregnant with my brother when she moved down there. And I think she was the most fearful of all because she was leaving behind her big family, huge family here in Kenosha, and she had never lived abroad or anywhere else beyond San Antonio, Texas. and it was a big change for her, and I think being pregnant with my brother made her feel especially vulnerable. I think when they moved there, I think they fell in love with Mexico City and really loved it and stayed through 1985. So they stayed in Mexico City.
What can you tell us about the specific work that your father did for Johnson's Wax?
Well, he was involved in the formation of the first Johnson's Wax factory in Mexico City. So he was not the head person or anything, but there was a contingent of people, Mexicans and Americans, that worked together to start the factory. And it wasn't a lot of people at first, but then it developed as time went on.
Right. And so he had a hand in, I suppose, the design and the construction and the opening of that factory. But then beyond that, then he stayed there for decades.
Yes, but he didn't stay with Johnson's Wax the whole time. That's what took him down originally. He worked for other companies. He worked for Pfizer Corporation. And then when the show, all this show stuff came about, he was working for Cartón y Papel de México, which is also connected to Container Corporation here in Chicago. So there's a connection between Container and Cartón y Papel de México was connected with Container Corporation in the United States.
Very good. Mm-hmm. We'll find out about that company in a moment, and then the artwork mm-hmm. which they mm-hmm. commissioned. Mm-hmm. I would love to hear just a little bit about your own personal experience of growing up in a place like Mexico City. And of course, I mean, it might seem sort of odd and exotic, but to you, it was the only childhood you knew, I suppose. But what did it feel like to you? Did it feel perfectly normal to be growing up in a place like Mexico City?
It did. I mean, you're right. People say, how was it? And I go, well, I didn't really know anything else. So it was a wonderful experience. And, you know, it was, I didn't know any different. And actually, Mexico City is a very international city, and there are people from all over the world that live in Mexico City. So when you live in Mexico City, it's like living in Paris or New York City. It's a huge city with very cosmopolitan. And
so you did not, in an uncomfortable way, stick out as being a fair-skinned American, for instance.
I did stick out, but there were others that stuck out too. I got a lot of attention because I wore miniskirts and had long, light-colored hair. So, you know, I got attention.
right.
But there are plenty of other people from all over the world that live in Mexico City. So it is very cosmopolitan. A lot of people don't understand that if they haven't been there. But it's a very cosmopolitan place, right, Francisco?
That's correct. I think one of the elements that's really appealing to me is I try to change the image of the exotic place, and it is true. And Mexico City is one of the most cosmopolitan cities on the world. Right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right now, three of the most important museums, contemporary art, are in Mexico City. So
mm-hmm.
You are in downtown Mexico City, some of the areas of the south of the city. And you forget that you are in Mexico City. It's totally different.
Mm-hmm.
You could be anywhere in the world. That's basically what I'm trying to say. So,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, and this exhibit probably just gives you a glimpse of that. We are mm-hmm. calling the exhibit "Imágenes of Latin America," but the artwork is when you see it in person, saying in person, it doesn't look Latin American. It's really important artwork. Mm-hmm. Contemporary art, the most influential artists in the 70s and 80s. So I believe that's part of the appealing part of this exhibit, just to
mm-hmm.
Kind of change the perspective about what is the difference between Mexico City and the rest of the world.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just from what I've seen of this particular art collection, it is as cosmopolitan as Mexico City, as you have described it,
mm-hmm.
in terms of its themes and flavors, it's mm-hmm. extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us, Lorna Baird, about at what point in your father's life he became, in a sense, associated with some of this great artwork that is part of the exhibit that's going to be opening.
Well, I wish I knew more about it, because I didn't always know the details of how he met the artists. Or it wasn't. There were many people working. I believe there were other people besides, him working on finding the artists. Maybe you guys know more about that. But
so, where was he working? For whom was he working at the time?
Yeah. So he was working for Cartón y Papel de México, which is connected to Container Corporation, and they wanted to sponsor, try to find, I think you guys probably know more about that part of it, but it was just, finding the artists, and then he was a part of a group of people that were working on this. It wasn't just him by himself.
Interesting. So, and it's probably important for our listeners to understand that this was not a company that had anything directly to do with the creation of art. This is just something they chose to do. Mm-hmm. Tell us more about the company and then how this folds into who they were.
Actually, that is really important, Greg. I believe this, and we have a conversation yesterday, and the involvement of the company, a company like Papel and Cartón de México, is really important for the support of the arts in general. Mm-hmm. I believe that this is a huge difference between the way that we support art and the way the other countries support art. And my involvement is, with the Kenosha Creative Space, everybody, I know that they support the arts, but when you come, it comes to the financial support of the arts, there is always other priorities. In the case of, and it's not only Papel and Cartón de México, that company is part of the Grupo Monterrey, this consortium of the 10 largest industries in Mexico, that they pretty much work on paper, glass, communications, transportation. And what they do as part of their, in their budgets, they actually include support for the arts. This kind of projects is, and the whole exhibit is about 257 pieces, Margaret? 249 pieces for the most important and relevant artists of the time. They can be the only possible with a really strong economic support. Mm-hmm. And it's part of the way that the companies embrace the support of the arts. One of the differences is the public art in Mexico. You will find it in every corner. And these artists are not only visual artists. They are representatives of the big mural movement, all the larger sculptures, architecture. So it's embedded in actually the way that you live. For me, and probably for Lorna, it's really natural to see it because you grow in that environment. Mm-hmm. You get used to just to see and living within this art world. Sometimes it really surprised me that when people think that this is different because we just it's embedded in the way that the way you live. But it's part of the culture. The corporations supported from the beginning. And someone in Milwaukee told me that things will change in this area when corporations they have enough status to have a marketing budget. They should have a creative budget and as part of the marketing budget because that will be the way that they will support the arts. Mm-hmm. And this is part of the culture. So I think that's also a really good way to showcase how the support of the arts can change your community. So. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very good. Mm-hmm. For those of you just joining us, we are talking about a spectacular art exhibit that is about to open at Kenosha Creative Space in downtown Kenosha, Imágenes de Latinoamérica. And we have with us Francisco Loyola and Margaret Heller with Kenosha Creative Space. Francisco Loyola is the executive director of Kenosha Creative Space. Margaret Heller is the project director for this particular exhibit, which is opening this weekend. And with us as well is Lorna Baird and her father, Tom Baird. Who used to work for Johnson's Wax and was working for another company at the time in Mexico City, that this spectacular artwork began to be assembled. Margaret Heller, it sounds like you've known of this art collection for quite some time. Tell us, first of all, about your initial encounter with it. That was decades ago, right? If I understand correctly.
In 1972, my husband and I were going to school in Mexico. And we traveled down in our Volkswagen bus with our two-year-old daughter. And at that time, Lorna was in the States, and she was going to college at Fresno? No.
University of the Pacific, Stockton, California.
As a voice major. And so we were down there, and we became the substitute for Lorna. So we would come over and visit and have dinner at their house, and her family was so gracious, but this was my mother's sister, and she was, delighted to have family there. Mm-hmm. And Uncle Tom loved to show his collection. So the collection started in 1971, and we were there in 1973 through 1974. So we were seeing the first 3 years of it. And he would pull out his portfolios, which they when they arrived here a couple weeks ago in Kenosha, they were still in the same portfolios, some of them. And he would flip through these images and tell us about them. But something that really stunned me at the time was, you know, I'm 24 years old and I want to impress my uncle that I know a little bit of art, because I'd gotten an A in art history at the University of Wisconsin. And he said to me, "You Americans, you just look at Europe. You're really missing a whole lot. You're not seeing what is happening in Latin America." And it was one of those things where an adult says that to you, it kind of makes you, you know, like, have a little bit of a chill, because you've just been put in your place. And then he exposed me to the amazing art of Latin America. And so it was always a thrill when he got this portfolio out. And at that time, the first year, there were 10 artists that were picked from mainly Mexico. And the second year, Cartón de Venezuela and Cartón de Colombia got involved. And so the amount of artists that they picked every year started growing. So it went from 10 artists in 1971 to 249 artists in 1980. And I, of course, only got to see that first 3 years. And when we were leaving Mexico, he pulled out the portfolios and he said, "You can pick one," which was stunning. You know, we were young kids, basically. And so he flipped through and I picked the last one, because they were all spectacular. And I've had it framed and with me since then. And at another time, he gave one to my parents, which became mine after my parents passed away. And so I just always knew that this was a spectacular collection, but I really didn't know how spectacular it was until we started doing this research in the last year, because I still didn't know enough about Latin American art, so I've done a lot of study in the last year of putting together biographies of these incredible artists and finding out most of them have gone on to have museums in their name, either because of the country they lived in made the museum, or that they created a museum with their work and other work. And it's just been an exciting research project for me.
One thing I want you to clarify for us is that, as you were talking about visiting, so Tom Baird would be your uncle?
He was my uncle-in-law, yeah. I guess you would say. Pat Baird, Lorna's mother, is my mother's sister. They were Tully girls. There were five Tully girls who were the daughters of James E. Tully. He was a judge here in Kenosha, and he was third generation Tully in Kenosha. So that makes me fifth generation. Lorna would be fifth generation, but in Mexico.
Right. So when you were visiting him, and he would take out these portfolios to show you proudly, you described it as though this was his collection, personally his collection. Can you clarify that? Because actually some of this comes into being because of the company, I think, for which he worked. And yet he must have had such a direct hand in the shaping of this collection that he felt a real sense of personal pride and almost ownership in it. Can you just clarify that?
Well, we have newspaper clippings that show that he was really the originator, and he was the person that was in charge of this project. And it was very, I don't remember him ever talking about his job, but he talked about this. And because they're a paper company, this was an important aspect. These are prints on paper. So he would commission 10 artists at beginning. He can commission 10 artists who would do an image either on stone, on metal, a woodcut, and he would have the paper flown in from Paris, because it had to be the top of the line paper, because that was Uncle Tom. And then he'd get a master printer who would print off 150 images. 150 images is called a limited edition, so no more images. The the medium is destroyed afterwards. No more images can be made, and that makes it valuable. There will be 150 copies of this piece of art. And then they were given to clients, investors, friends, museums. There's an entire collection of the 249 pieces in Caracas and in Bogota. And the Museum of Modern Art has 36 images. San Francisco Modern Art has several images. And we have 31 here at the Creative Space.
Wow. Very, very good. Thank you for clarifying the history of this. Mm-hmm. And I wish this was television rather than radio, because you have in front of you a really spectacular book. Explain what that book is that you've brought with you.
Well, in 1988, there was an exhibit of all of them, and I'm not remembering at the moment where it was. Mm-hmm. It was in Latin America someplace, and I think it went to several different places. But it was an exhibit of the entire collection of art, and they put together a book. And Lorna's brother, Peter, had the book, and I have since gotten it through Amazon. And he told me, I have a book, I'll send it to you, so it would help me with the research that I was doing as the images were arriving here. And I'm expecting a pamphlet. So I was pretty surprised to receive this, you know, probably about a 10-pound book of images, which will be at the show, so that when you come, not only do we have a biography of the artists in English and Spanish, but we have a short audio tour of many of the images. And then, because so many of these artists continued on to become even more famous than they were in 1970, we have YouTube videos of interviews from them, from television, from various interviews along the years, so that you can get a real in-depth sense of who the artists are and what the art is about, because it's not just seeing it, it's about really involving yourself in it. And I really want to specify that that the wall cards are in Spanish and English. Lorna did all the translation for me, and we really want everybody in town of all cultures to come see this, but to feel the pride that we feel about this incredible collection.
Lorna Baird, what can you tell us about your father's interest in art? Was this something you remember being an important part of his life all along, or is this something that was sort of ignited at this point in his life by the interest of, for instance, the company he was working for and so on?
Yeah. Well, first of all, he fell in love with Mexico, everything about Mexico, when they first moved down there, and I know that he was just passionate about Mexican art and Mexican culture. And he made friends very easily. He talked to people very easily, met a lot of people. He would invite all kinds of people back to the house. So he was he had the gift of the gab. And as far as art is concerned, I think his art I think he always enjoyed art, but he didn't really have art training or anything. But I think when he worked for Container Corporation, he started meeting a lot more artists, and the people that worked in the Cartón y Papel de México, the graphic designers and people like that. I think that was a major exposure for him as time went by. And I think actually working on this project was where he learned the most about art, was meeting these people, and that's what really made him much more passionate about art when he discovered, you know, all these artists and started meeting some of them and meeting most of them, I'm assuming. I don't know all the details. I wish I could ask him a lot more, but he's been gone, so can't find out all the details. But, yeah, so then I think it developed really around this project. His awareness and his passion just really, really grew.
And I assume that this is something that he shared with you. I mean, that this was something that was, in a sense, not just a part of his life, but a part of your life as a family.
Yes, it was. Yeah, we kind of took it for granted, unfortunately. We would also be asked, you know, which prints do you want to take? And because I lived in the States and it was hard to transport them, I had nowhere to put them. I wouldn't always say, well, I'll take this, I'll take that, you know, and I also wanted them to stay safe, you know.
Right.
So it was kind of hard for me to picture packing them in my suitcase and that kind of thing. So, yeah, but I think we, because I was already out of the house and in college, I didn't always know about all this stuff. I was already living in the States, and so I would just come back for visits. But, of course, every time I came back, we would hear about it, you know, and see the prints just like Margaret did. And my parents actually had a lot of the prints, you know, in their home. So. Mm-hmm.
And I also want to add, coming from the United States and college and then coming to Mexico into the Baird family, they were surrounded by art that mm-hmm. she probably wouldn't appreciate. So, you know, at that time we had, you know, in our family we had a nice picture that was over the mantle and we had something behind the couch. But you went into the Baird house and their dishes were beautiful hand-painted dishes from Mexico, and there was textiles and there were baskets. But there was also beautiful artwork by Rufino Tamayo on the wall, mm-hmm. and everything framed beautifully. And I mean, something that was stunning to me was that outside of their huge dining room window was a wall, and it was only 2 feet away. Now, they painted it a spectacular midnight blue and put a terracotta sun on it so uh-huh. that it was part of the art of the house, even though it could have been just a total distraction as a concrete wall. It was stunning.
Wow. Somebody who really had an eye for art and its beauty mm-hmm. and its impact.
Well, the influence of Mexican folk arts mm-hmm. and of Mexican art, like Francisco said, it is around you all the time. So as a kid, I think I took it for granted, but it was a part of my growing up. And it's, you know, it's the Mexican sense of art being a part of the everyday life, and mm-hmm. you know, from artisans to fine art. It's just around you all the time. Yeah.
For those of you just joining us, we are talking about a spectacular art exhibit that opens this weekend at Kenosha Creative Space in downtown Kenosha and will be on display through the middle of September. The exhibit is called Imágenes de Latinoamérica. And we've been hearing just now from Lorna Baird, and this mm-hmm. collection in large part extends from her family, and it was her father Tom, while working in Mexico City, who had a very direct hand in the assembling of this spectacular collection of ultimately 249 works of art. Margaret Heller and Francisco Loyola are with us as well from Kenosha Creative Space to talk about this. So Margaret Heller, talk about the specific pieces that are part of this exhibit, and maybe a word about how these 30-some pieces were selected, or are they just the 31 that came to you?
They were the 31 that came to me, and they came to me in packages from all over the United States. Tom Baird Jr. lives in Tennessee, and Lorna's in Oakland, and Peter and David are in Denver. My daughter now owns the one that I selected from Mexico, so hers came from Kansas City. It's interesting because what we're familiar here is the folk art of Mexico. We know about the baskets and maybe the silver jewelry and maybe the textiles, but these are modern art pieces. There's a piece by Carlos Cruz Diaz, who just happened to have passed away in the last 2 weeks, and he's from Venezuela, and he's the originator of optic art or kinetic art, really the originator. So what optic art means is it depends on the position of the viewer. So as you walk around the piece, it's changing. It's giving you more depth. It's giving you different color, and it's a very simple piece, but it's stunning, and there's a few pieces from the muralists of Mexico, and then there's a piece from Cuevas. He was an anti-muralist, and this totally fascinated me. I'd never heard anything about it, but he came out very strongly against the muralists because he felt that the muralists were, first of all, funded by the government, and that because of that the funding, they painted really happy pictures of peasants making tortillas and celebrating the Day of the Dead, which we all appreciate. But the fact of the matter is, he said, That's poverty. You know, you're celebrating poverty as if it's a gift, as if it's a wonderful thing. And yes, there are wonderful aspects about it. But then you look at Cuevas's work, and it's almost chilling how grotesque it is. He's an excellent artist, but his lines are perfect, his drawings are perfect, but really grotesque images of humans in misery, in madness, in various, you know, various negative states of humanity. So do you want to add something, Francisco, actually?
Actually, that you mentioned about the artists they are represented in the exhibit. Mm-hmm. When I have starting this conversation with Margaret, and I think at that time I referred to this as a mythological collection that probably didn't really exist, because all the names that are mentioned there are names that O'Higgins, Tamayo, José Luis Cuevas, Cruz Diaz, is names that not only good artists are really influential in the work of art, but also are really influential in politics. They're really influential in the creating movements that change their countries. I think that's probably the most amazing part, is not only the art. When you start learning, and I really appreciate the work that Lorna and Margaret did with put together the bios of today, you learn about the involvement they as an artist they have into their communities. So I think that's really, really important to me. But the José Luis Cuevas that Margaret just mentioned is one of the most controversial artists in Mexico's city. You are either love his art or you hate his art. You love his point of views or you hate his point of views. He was really involved and really active, and that makes this even more important, because they actually were really committed artists, not only the craftsmanship, but the way that the way I would like to describe it is that alter their environment. So they are actually there, and you will see it. You start learning about that. Cruz Diaz is a great example. It's not only the kinetic art. If you go, I haven't been into Caracas. Had the opportunity to go to Caracas, Venezuela, but after looking at some of the pictures and some of the architecture that he, because he's not only a small visual art. There are huge buildings, really big buildings. They are built just using his techniques or inspired by his art. That gives a total different colorful atmosphere. So it's really impressed for the names that we have at the exhibit. So,
right. I was just reading his story, as a matter of fact, on the website. So this would be a biography that you put together then, Margaret, of Carlos Cruz Diaz, that it talks about how after World War II, Venezuela shifted dramatically and became much more modern. And in a sense, then, the work that he did is very vividly representative of the way Venezuela itself changed. So it's not just pretty striking pictures, but the story behind the pictures of the artist and or the country in which they worked.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was moving from an agrarian society rapidly into industrial because of the oil production, and the oil changed everything, and the government didn't want artists that were doing political imagery or socialist imagery. They wanted like your tie. They wanted something modern, and it didn't make a statement about politics. It didn't make a statement about what the oil industry might be doing to somebody who had a farm in Caracas or Venezuela.
Margaret, what can you tell us about the kind of commissions that we're talking about here, or the invitations given by this company to create art? I mean, were they, in a sense, invited to do whatever the heck they wanted to do, or was it a more, in a sense, complicated and maybe limited, focused kind of invitation?
I've thought about that question a lot in looking at these, because the book is absolutely wonderful, but it's in alphabetical order. So I would love to see it in order of, like, who were the first artists in 1971 and what how did they influence the artists that were picked in 1980? But from what I can tell, really, people were selected by their name, their reputation, their body of work, and they were given free range to do whatever they wanted to. And I don't know how competitive it actually became. And, I'd love to know the answer to that, and when you find out.
From a technical point of view, that's also a great point, because all the fine art techniques are represented in the exhibit. So the Rufino Tamayo is probably the most well-recognized name of the artist, and the print that they created. I just imagine how long it will take him to create a handmade paper. I believe it was made by the artist, because the way that this process, it has to be created at the same time that we are creating the paper. So it's not only the art, it's the techniques and the craftsmanship of the exhibit is what is also impressive. That's the word I would like to use.
And one of the things that I noticed when I finally got to see them, because I'd seen pictures of them, and then they were arriving in packages from Easy Pack and Ship, and were opening them up, and they were just stunning to see them in person. But when you make a print, you have to do a copy for each color. So if you have three colors in a print, the registration has to be perfect. And what I mean by that, I think the best example is when you put lipstick on and you go outside the lines and it's over the top of the lip. It really shows when you have a bad printing process. And so the master printers that put this together under the instruction of the artist did a spectacular job. There's nothing that is out of alignment. They are perfectly printed, and they come out of the package, to me, absolutely stunning. I would be opening them up at Seebex or at DeBerg's. We chose two local framing shops to put these together, and we would all just be oohing and aahing as they were coming out of the package, because seeing them in person is really stunning.
Talk for a moment, Margaret, about the process of actually hanging this show, because I'm sure certain choices have to be made about the overall impact of the overall exhibit and how these should be viewed, in what order, and so on.
Well, I'll start and I'll let Francisco finish, but we were so lucky to get Glenn Larson from Parkside, who's a photographer, and his other form of art is hanging shows. And so he was with us for 2 days hanging the show, and did a spectacular job. But, you know, first of all, we didn't even know if the show would fit in the creative space, and we managed to just get it in perfectly. We didn't have room for a single other, and we did have plans for which one we might have to pull in order to get all the information that we wanted to have there, the wall cards, the photographs, and so he lined them up against the wall and just started moving them around, and I'll have Francisco finish up on that.
Actually, I guess that question to Glenn, because I trust him. I have worked with Glenn Larson for different projects, but the way that he explained to me is that first he needs to know the art, so he spent some time just looking at all the art, and then start to try to find the, it's not a logical order. It's more like an emotional order that the art needs to be represented. And actually, this is an important conversation, because we have discussions about how the art should be hung, how everything should be put together. So we get into an agreement, and I think everybody is really happy with the way the is going to be represented. But also the process of hanging the artwork is a really important element of the exhibit. It's, like I say, I was really impressed when he said it's not a logical process. It's more like an emotional process. You need to have not only one individual piece of artwork needs to talk to you, but the whole exhibit needs to be cohesive and it has to make sense. Mm-hmm. So he decided to group the artwork by the representational moving into abstract, mm-hmm. and I think it makes sense, and I think it looks and start working with color and combination, and he's looking what he calls the flow, so that you can it needs to go into a flow. Mm-hmm. So I looking forward so that we can remove everything from the space, and finally we have the whole exhibit. We're working on lighting today, and really excited about the final product. So,
Lorna Baird. Can you put into words what this means to you and to other members of your family who are sharing pieces that now belong to you that were, in a sense, so important to your own father? What does this mean for you to see this exhibit coming together?
Really, it means the world. I mean, it's wonderful to know that my father's work is being appreciated, and also what he was so passionate about will be seen by many people. So in memory of my dad, yeah, it's a wonderful thing, and my mother, and also we have also dedicated this show to the memory of our Margaret's sister, Patty Heller, my cousin, who died this past year. So there's a lot of family emotion about this, but I think for me and my brothers, we took a lot for granted as kids, and it is wonderful for me personally to, you know, being raised in Latin America, to see, to share a little bit about what my history was too, and for just others to know how wonderful Latin America is. I can't think of any other way of putting it.
That's a very good way to put it. Absolutely. A rich culture, an array of cultures that we need to better understand.
Right.
So, Margaret Heller, explain to our listeners when they can see this exhibit for themselves. When is it open to the public? And remind our listeners exactly where Creative Space is.
Creative Space is on the northeast corner of 57th Street and 7th Avenue. And we're having a private opening, as I said, on Saturday night, just for family and friends of my sister, who the show is dedicated to, Patty Heller Blyle. And then on Sunday, the Creative Space is open.
It will be open from 10 o'clock to 3 p.m. But I have the feeling that we're going to stay open longer. since the article hit the newspaper yesterday, we have been receiving a few phone calls on the visitors, they're planning to attend to the exhibit this Sunday. Mm. So the rest of the month, we're having several events that we're finalizing the schedule. But the gallery will be open Wednesday to Saturday from 2 to 8 p.m. and Sundays from 10 to 2, all the way to September 15.
Very good. And we direct people to KenoshaCreativeSpace.com.
That's correct.
And we remind people that it's at 624 57th Street.
May I add something really quick? I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
Before we forget, I would like to say thank you, because we couldn't do this exhibit without the support of the Greater Milwaukee Foundation. In a personal note for the Kenosha Creative Space, the fact that we were able to obtain this grant, I believe this is going to open doors, because in order to receive it, you need to be compliant, and it's not easy to get these grants. But this exhibit couldn't be impossible with the support for the foundation.
So. Well done. Yes. Francisco Loyola, Margaret Heller, and Lorna Baird, thank you so much for being part of the morning show. I hope many people will seek out this wonderful exhibit. And thank you for being part of the program today.
Thank you.
We finish out with a quick word from Nan Calvert, taking care of some business we didn't have time to finish yesterday. Nan Calvert was with us yesterday on the morning show from Rutpike Wynn, and we had a fantastic conversation about preserving the rusty-patched bumblebee, but did not get to something very important at the end of the program, namely Nan's calendar of environmental events. So we're going to take care of that right off the bat. So, Nan, what's going on that people need to know about?
Oh, I'll let you know in just one second. Again, if you want information about native plants to put in your front or your backyard that will attract pollinators, especially the rusty-patched bumblebee, get hold of me at nan@rootpikewin.org. All right, so coming up really quickly on August 10th from 8:30 a.m. until 1:30 p.m. is the Maine event, M-A-N-E, Maine event, hosted by Caledonia Conservancy. It'll be held at the Neubauer Farm in Racine. You can register before or on the day of the event, and this is a trail ride hosted by the Caledonia Conservancy, and all proceeds go to help keep those trails open for everyone, not just people who ride their horses. The registration forms are on the Caledonia Conservancy website. Just go and click on the Maine event and that registration form will come up, and there it is for you. Very easy. On August 25th from 4 p.m. until 7:30 p.m. is the third annual farm-to-table dinner at the Racine Dominican Eco Justice Center. It will feature Racine area's Youth Farm Corps program and some of the things that they grew at the Eco Justice Center this year. Seasonal dishes will be prepared by some of Racine's finest chefs. They will be serving cocktails, so this is an adult-only event. To register, go to the website, click on Farm to Table Dinner, and it will give you all the instructions you need to know. The fee is $100 per person, and it goes to support the